Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, it's my pleasure to welcome you here this morning to our roundtable discussion. As you know, we're going to be talking about some public transit issues and bus rapid transit and other new modes of transportation. But first, I wanted to give you a heads up about next month, our November schedule, which will be on the website sometime next week. We're kind of going all academic next month. We're going to start out with Dr. David Rogers, who is the new president of SUNY Morrisville. You may have heard they're doing some very interesting things there. I think they've got one of the first Startup New York projects around agribusiness. The Empire Brewing Company is opening a new brewery there, a new restaurant. The college has a brewing minor, major. So a lot of interesting things going on just over there in Madison County. The second week, we're going to be talking about China with Dr. Mary Lovely. She's an economist at the Maxwell School. So we're going to be talking about the Chinese economy, which, as we know, or should, I think, has a lot to do with our own and the stock market and all of that. So hopefully she'll be able to shed some light on that. Not saying she's going to make any predictions, but we'll be talking about China's economy. And then we're going to welcome Dr. Linda LaMura from LeMoyne College, not new to LeMoyne, but the new president. And so it will be her first visit here to the roundtable. Again, lots of things going on at LeMoyne. I think I heard the governor's in town today to announce something new. So that's November. So we'll be looking forward to that. Before we get to next Thursday, though, I know I don't have to remind you all, especially the candidates in the room, that next Tuesday is election day. So vote early, not often. If you're not sure where you're supposed to go to vote or who the candidates are, if you want to look at ongov.net/elections, that would be great. You'll find all the information there. Right, Ed? All right. So for the past several months, the Onondaga Citizens League has been studying transportation. We're calling the study How CNY Moves. At least one of our co-chairs is here, Heidi Holtz. We've had a series of discussions on all different aspects of transportation. And so I'm very pleased that we have today with us someone from the Capital District Transportation Authority, as well as our own planning agency, to talk about some new things that are going on here and there in Albany. Mario Colon, many of you know, is the program manager with Syracuse Metropolitan Transportation Council. He's has over 13 years experience in transportation planning and manages many of the capital and multimodal projects in the area. Ross Farrell, thank you, Ross, for coming out from Albany today, is the director of planning for the Capital District Transportation Authority. He's been there for 10 years. So we're going to start with Mario.
I'd like to thank Sandra for the invite. We're very happy at the SMTC to be able to come here and speak with you this morning. As Sandra mentioned, I work for the Syracuse Metropolitan Transportation Council. We are the area's metropolitan planning organization. And what that means, besides me throwing out a lot of acronyms, we look to any form of transportation. We deal with bridges, highways, bicycle, pedestrian, and certainly transit, of which I'm here to highlight a concept that we have going on right now at the SMTC. Starting off, what I was asked to speak about briefly, not only our project that we have going on, but just to give a little background information into enhanced transit discussions that have already occurred in the community, and talk a little bit about what some of those enhanced concepts are. So in 2014, There was a project that was completed by the New York State Department of Transportation called the Syracuse Transit System Analysis. And what that project focused on, it was one component of several of the I-81 challenge, which was the planning study prior to where the state DOT is now within their alternatives, their environmental work going on. The I-81 challenge was led by the SMTC and the New York State DOT, and we were involved with this Syracuse systems analysis. So really what it was related somewhat to Interstate 81, but it was not focused exclusively as an answer to the 81 concerns. It was a long-term vision of the transit system in Onondaga County. What that focused on was identifying several corridors within Onondaga County for the possibility of further analysis and future changes dealing with bus rapid transit or light rail transit. But before I get into bus rapid transit and light rail, there's also some other enhanced priority treatments that the transit system analysis focused on, and there's three of them here on screen. We may be familiar with some of these, but bus-only lanes, which we do not have anywhere in Onondaga County right now. Essentially, it is the travelway exclusive just for a bus. So we have bicycle lanes throughout the community. This is just for buses. We have bus pullouts. Those exist along several locations in Onondaga County, particularly along the connective corridor. And lastly, it's a type of treatment technology, which is transit signal priority or transit signal preemption, which is essentially it's a signal emitted from a bus to a traffic signal that as you're approaching a green light, it's saying, hey, hold that light for me so we can continue on with our movement. Two enhanced transit concepts that were talked about within the transit systems analysis are bus rapid transit and light rail transit. So for those who may not be familiar with the concepts, bus rapid transit and light rail, as it says here, they're enhanced concepts. So on the bus rapid transit side, it's different than what we have operational here in Onondaga County with Centro. Bus rapid transit is a higher form, higher intensity. It's using some of the transit enhancement treatments that I just mentioned. Again, it's meant to, with the rapid part of BRT, it's to meet the timings of a vehicle or a car. It will never be able to beat the timing, but it's to be competitive with vehicle operations. Light rail transit, kind of similar to bus rapid transit, it uses the same concepts, those enhancements, and it's also it's a little bit of a combination of bus rapid transit and passenger rail. So you're on a rail system. For bus rapid transit, there's different intensities of treatments. So here's just one example. It's called the designated transit way. It's essentially a right-of-way exclusive just for the bus, and this is here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. This is the first bus rapid transit operation in the country, followed by bus-only lanes. This is an example in Cleveland, Ohio. This is their health line. So again, going back to this is using bus lanes. So again, it's a little different than the designated transit way. And lastly, we have mixed traffic, which is an example that we'll hear about in a few minutes out in Albany, the Bus Plus system. Moving over to light rail, again, there's different intensities of treatments. This example here is new rail. So where rail did not exist, the rail was constructed. This is in Phoenix, Arizona. To utilizing older rail or existing rail, this is the New Jersey River Line in New Jersey. And lastly, kind of a little throwback to what we had here in Syracuse back in the early 1900s, the streetcar. So taking all of that under consideration, Centro approached the SMTC and asked us if we would be interested in advancing a recommendation from the transit system analysis, which was focused on looking at two particular corridors in the city of Syracuse for the feasibility of bus rapid transit or light rail transit. Our project that we're calling the Syracuse Metropolitan Area Regional Transit Study Phase 1, and what I was saying before for acronyms, this is another one. It's called our SMART study, aptly enough. The two corridors that we're going to be examining are James Street in the Eastwood neighborhood, down through downtown, along South Avenue, and out to the Onondaga Community College. And the other corridor is beginning in the north at the Regional Transportation Center to Destiny through downtown and to the Hill and a little further down to where we are here in the South Campus area. The study components, we've scoped our project to be in line with a funding program from the Federal Transit Administration called their New Starts or Small Starts program. That's a program that what is providing the majority of the capital funding for these types of projects throughout the country. So some of the things that we're going to be looking at are the mode. Are we looking at bus rapid transit or light rail transit? The alignments. Where could it go along these two corridors? Station locations. This is key. Bus rapid transit or light rail transit, again, I'm saying it's enhanced service. It's not your typical bus service. It's not stopping at every corner or every other corner. Stations could be anywhere from a quarter mile spread out to a half mile. This is a branded concept to attract not only existing riders and providing improved services, but as a potential to draw new riders into the system or onto the system. Just going down the line through some of these other ones here, social, economic, and environmental impacts assessment. We're including this within our project now under the impression that in the future, that if Centro wants to advance the project forward for funding consideration into that New Starts or Small Starts process, that we do not have to redo any of the work. So we're actually doing quite a bit of work within this study right now in anticipation of, we feel that one or two of these corridors is appropriate for the concept of bus rapid transit or light rail transit to move forward. And lastly, significant public involvement. I think for those in the room that may be familiar with the SMTC, as my director, James Diagostino, says, we don't do anything in a back room. We're transparent. We're an open agency. We feel that this project is very important. It's not just for us. It's not for Centro. It's for the community. So we'd like to hear from you guys. So in the next several months, we're going to be ramping up a lot of meetings, be the community meetings such as this, going out into the neighborhoods along those corridors, and to, you know, everyone's favorite large-scale public meetings and open houses. So that was just a very quick intro into what we're doing here in Syracuse and laying the framework for the concepts of bus rapid transit, light rail transit. If you have any questions, I guess I'm sticking around after for a while. But again, love to hear from you guys moving forward and hope to hear from you again as we get more information out there in the community. So, Ross?
All right, thanks, Mario, and thanks, Sandra. Happy to be here to speak to everybody about bus rapid transit that's happened in the Capital Region. My name is Ross Farrell. I'm the director of CDTA. So when I started with CDTA, we had been in a very similar spot that Syracuse and SMTC and Centro were in. We're just really starting to look at what are we going to do with certain corridors that have a lot of congestion, but a lot of potential for enhanced transportation. So we went through the entire process that is happening now in Syracuse and basically came up with the best solution for our region was bus rapid transit. I'll start with just a little background of what CDTA is. Very similar size transit authority as Syracuse, as well as the other upstate properties. We do serve a slightly smaller geographic area, so we serve four counties. And I think the biggest thing to point out is that, you know, we're up to 17 million rides per year. This has been 2 years in a row we've had our record-breaking ridership levels since we were formed in the early 1970s. And as you can see, that's, you know, now it's actually nearing 5 years that it'll be over a 25% increase. It's been due to a lot of different initiatives we've done. We did comprehensive route restructuring, so our entire route system, if you looked at it 10 years ago or even 5 years ago, it's completely different than it is today. Basically, what we did is very simply move service from where it was to where there was the highest demand. We have other programs like Universal Access, where institutions can have their employees or students ride for free. I'll touch on that in a second. And then most importantly, actually has been our implementation of our first bus rapid transit line. This is all at the same time with what every transit authority in upstate New York is dealing with, which is very limited operating budgets, operating and capital budgets. So that budget really hasn't changed in the last 4 or 5 years. But we've been able to use existing resources to our best ability and be able to increase ridership. So our vision is for 40 miles of bus rapid transit. This kind of gives you the map. As Mario was touching on, you know, BRT and light rail can be looked upon as sort of the same type of mode. You know, one has just more enhancements. One's obviously on tracks and trains. But what you want to do is broadcast that system as very similar, if you're doing bus rapid transit, very similar to light rail. So as you can see, we try to make a light rail map, and this is what it's going to look like in the next 3 or 4 years. The red line from downtown Albany out to downtown Schenectady, Albany is our largest city, Schenectady is our second largest city, is where the red line runs, and that started operation in 2011. The purple line goes from downtown Albany out to Crossgates Mall, which is the region's largest mall, and the University of Albany, which is the region's largest college. And then the blue line goes along the Hudson River from the south end of Albany, actually all the way down to the port of Albany, through downtown, hits a number of different municipalities that developed along the Hudson River, and hits Troy, which is the region's third largest city, and then up to two more villages and cities of Waterford and Cohoes. So the red line's in progress. The planning for the purple line, the blue line, are complete. We're right now right in the middle of design for those. And as I say to everyone, you know, everything's funding dependent. But right now we are set up to begin construction for at least one of these lines in 2017. So I'll give you some background of the Bus Plus Red Lines, just another map showing all the station stops in the city of Albany, in the city of Schenectady, and as you can see, less stops in the middle, primarily that's the suburban areas where there are some shopping centers, but as you can see right here, is really not the density for having stations. Mario touched on this, but basically our type of bus rapid transit is in mixed traffic, is what could be called basic bus rapid transit. The health line is sort of full bus rapid transit. That's when you have a bus lane the entire way. And then you have the next level, which is light rail. Right now, there are basic bus rapid transit lines that we're going to, as time goes on, upgrade to full, and then potentially, and this might be literally 20 years out, upgrade those to light rail. So you really got to think of BRT as sort of the building block for light rail, because you'll probably have a lot of conversations in your community, what's better and what's worse, but you really don't need to have that argument at all. You just have to think as BRT as that first step. The key part is uniquely branding your service, making sure that it's different, making sure that it looks better, and something that someone who's a non-rider will see and say, hey, that's not your conventional bus. I might want to ride that. We have Wi-Fi on the buses, security cameras at all the stations, which are monitored into the municipal police departments. Transit signal priority, which is what Mario touched on, that's the one way to speed up the service. If you can imagine driving down a street and never hitting a red light, you can see how much faster your trip's going to be. We have queue jumpers, which are sort of mini bus lanes at really congested intersections. So What happens here is a bus is able to bypass a queue of traffic, get in front. It gets a green light before the other traffic gets the green light, so it gets actually in front of all that traffic. And that at these intersections can save 2 or 3 minutes of time, which is really significant in transit terms. You save 30 seconds in transit terms, and that's a success. But if you're saving 2 or 3 minutes for every single trip, that's a huge benefit. We did have real-time bus displays, and we still do. The red line debuted in 2011. Now we actually have it on for every single bus stop in every single for every single route, but via the smartphone. So this is kind of actually outdated technology for us, but it was in 2011 the first time that the Capital Region ever had real-time bus information, which is huge because of the fact that a lot of people, you know, you got your schedule and the schedule says it's going to show up at a certain time, but as we know, you can never guarantee that. But if you have some sort of technology that tells you exactly when that bus is going to arrive, then you have that ability where, hey, the bus is going to be 10 minutes late, well, I don't need to leave my office right now, or I can go get a cup of coffee. You can really align your personal schedule to the transit system if you know exactly when that bus is going to arrive. So it's a 17-mile corridor, talked about that. In the middle is the densest suburban area in the Capital Region, which is Colony, and one of the region's largest malls. As I talked about before, there is a sort of a gap that's a dead zone where we don't have stations. There's still obviously development there, there's people there, but there isn't enough to warrant a BRT line. And the key part to remember about a BRT line is you have your BRT service, but underneath it you have your local service. So you may only be stopping at the key destinations for the BRT, but that doesn't mean the area like this sort of 3-mile gap doesn't have service. It's just service by the local routes. It's also this and a lot of the other corridors are areas that are in need of revitalization or already under revitalization. CDTA sees itself as not just a transit authority, but sort of an economic development agency. You can see this throughout the country where if you bring in enhanced forms of transportation, you have development. And that dates back to, you know, as early as the Erie Canal or any sort of waterway. You build good transportation, you usually have economic development that goes along with it. A lot of numbers here, but I always go back to that fact that we're at 17 million rides per year, and you can kind of do the math of the proportion of riderships that's on these three BRT corridors. 3.8 million rides per year, that's been a 25% growth, which is enormous for one transit project. Decreased travel times by 20% due to the Q jumpers transit signal priority. When we first rolled it out, we could have delayed the project until we were sure we had every dollar lined up. Our original service plan and our original capital plan was much, much larger than it was when we rolled it out. But our CEO, at the time and still our CEO today, Karim Basile, sort of looked at this as, well, we got to do something because if we just wait for the money, then the money's never going to come. So we rolled it out, and since then we've increased the frequency. At one point it was every 15 minutes, now we got it down to every 12, and I'm really hoping that, you know, in the next year or two we get it down to every 10 minutes. We used to have service that honestly ended at 5 p.m. on a Sunday, which you can imagine is not good enough. Since then, now it ends at midnight on Sundays. We've even expanded the line to go to the Greyhound station. And we actually got our first two articulated buses for the region 2 weeks ago. But we're hoping to expand on the BRT line, have full articulated buses, which I'll talk about in a second. But those are essentially the very long 60-foot buses with the bendy accordion piece in the middle, adds 50% more capacity. Our biggest issue actually is a great issue to have is capacity. Our buses are just too crowded on this corridor, and we need to try to address that. Capital costs, and I'll try to put this in reference, you know, $25 million to anyone, obviously personally, is a lot of money. For a transit project, that is a drop in the bucket. This is a very, very cost-effective project, especially along a 17-mile corridor. If this was light rail, that number would probably be at around $500 million. So that's the sort of the big piece to talk about and have the region discuss, and it's going to be obviously washed or figured out in Mario's study is, you know, what's the most cost-effective option to have? And The other piece is, because you got to go through this small starts, new starts process, which is basically the federal money to fund rapid transit. It's very easy to go to them and ask for $25 million than it is to go to them and ask for $500 million. So just keep that in mind as you're thinking about this. Operating costs, just always reference back to $79 million per year. And actually, when this rolled out, it was probably around 76 or less. I think a key thing to point out is the current operating cost of the line is here. This is what it was when we first started. So since we first started, we've continuously, bit by bit, invested more and more into the transit line, basically due to the high ridership demand that there is. The other thing that we've been very successful with is matching all of the different projects we have. So I talked about a route restructuring we did. I talked about a universal access program, and then the BRT. A lot of these came about at the same time and have fed off of each other. So for instance, our route restructurings were heavily based around where we could feed people to the BRT lines. We knew where the stations were. We knew that some routes went nowhere near stations, so we adjusted them. So obviously bringing more people on feeder routes to the BRT helped the BRT ridership. The other piece is this universal access. And very simply what that is if you're an employee or a student at all of the major colleges, I think we're up to around 12 of them. There's actually one college in the region that we haven't gotten on board. But every other college student in the entire region, whether it's the University at Albany, Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, all over the county, all over the four counties, can ride for free with their ID. So in their mind, all they do is take an ID out of their ID that's, you know, they swipe in the food court, is the same one that they swipe into a CDTA fare box. That has, especially with the colleges that are along the BRT lines, has helped also spur the growth. So SCCC and Mildred Ely Austin School, those are schools that are right next to BRT stations. And so when we started universal access with them, not only did students get free ridership, but they got really good service. Now when I say free, it's free to the student in the sense of no out-of-pocket cost, but the colleges do reimburse us for the rides they take. A student gets on, swipes their ID, that ID is recorded, we count up the number, and then we bill the college. And there's a cost there, but the college, of course, many of the colleges are thinking, well, it was either this or build a parking garage. It was either this or buy more land. And so it's actually financially much better for them. Plus, it's a huge benefit for the students and the staff that they really appreciate it. The other key part is the actual city of Albany. They and actually all the municipalities. That's a really key piece. You can't just do transportation without changing land use. So they have worked on a transit-oriented development guidebook, and they're actually updating their zoning code based on where our existing and future BRT stations are, so that we'll have higher density development occurring where the BRT stations are. And there's just been and this is really with, I think, any upstate region, there's been certain areas of every city that have been revitalizing, and where more people are moving in, more development is happening. So there's more people being developed around where our BRT stations are. So the next line is the purple line, and I'll just tell you the main colors of the University at Albany are purple, and that is why it's called the purple line. University at Albany is actually probably going to end up being around 40 to 45% of the ridership on this line. Just real quick to explain it, downtown Albany. So here's the red line that I just talked about. Downtown Albany is here. That the two lines are going to basically overlap in downtown Albany. Split apart, and this is Western Avenue. Western Avenue is kind of, think of your midtown type area. Right here is the one small campus of the University at Albany. It's got multiple campuses along the corridor. This area around Quail Street is the main student neighborhood. So if you're an off-campus student, this is where you're living. Up here at Partridge Street, right next to it, is a very large UAlbany dormitory. So that's another small campus, but also the College of St. Rose, which is a small liberal arts school whose other main color is purple, so that just reinforces it. This Allen and Madison is sort of your classic uptown area. It's got a business district, higher density of housing, good student population as well. Going through these areas, there's a little less ridership here, but right here is where the project sort of completely changes. That's where we're having a portion of the project be that full bus rapid transit. So from this street all the way to this street, it will be a bus-only right-of-way throughout the campus. These are two campuses, the University of Albany's Uptown campus and the Harriman campus. The Harriman campus is a very large state office campus that is being redeveloped, and we're hoping to be a catalyst of that. And then the University of Albany is really centered here. The outside of it is mainly parking. So it's a high-density core with parking on the outside. We don't want to be on the other side of the parking. We want to be right dead center. The University of Albany has obviously been our main proponent of the line. Their long-term master plan actually set it up so where the busway is going to go is preserved. So it won't be that all of a sudden we find out there's a building getting built where we plan to put a busway. Also, this dot here is where they are doing their campus center expansion. So the bus is literally going to go to the front door of the campus center, which is at the heart of the university. And then it continues on to, you know, not so much of a busway. As you can see here, it's kind of a curly Q. But in the long-term idea is to actually extend this busway all the way to Crossgates Mall. The only issue is right there is two highways, so we'd have to build a bus bridge spanning around 12 lanes of highway. Take the project, make it probably three times as much. One day that will happen, but for right now it's really not cost effective. But nonetheless, the project will go back into mixed-use traffic, hit Crossgates Commons, which is another large retail location, and then Crossgates Mall, which is the largest mall in the region, and where we plan to build a transit center, which I'll go into in a second. Again, always go back to this 17 million riders per year. This is, remember, an 8-mile corridor, not a 17-mile corridor. So there's a little bit less ridership, but it's in a much smaller corridor. So it's very, 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 very productive in terms of transit. Dense corridor throughout, really no dead zone. You have the downtown. This is really what drives it, is the institutions. There's another institution that just started because SUNY Polytechnic was part of the University of Albany and sort of broke away, became its own college. They've been our newest universal access client. They just started in August and actually already built the infrastructure for the BRT line. It's being served by local buses, but all we have to do is take their existing shelter, move it out of the way, and put a silver and purple shelter out, and then they're good to go. So they've been a great partner. The Harriman campus is that state office campus, and then again, Crossgates Mall. So Crossgates Mall, real quick, this is the mall itself. This is where we're going to build a transit center, which is actually going to be a half deck over existing parking. Pyramid Companies is the owner of this mall, which obviously is the owner of Destiny as well. They have been a huge partner with us on this for a number of different reasons. And we spent a lot of time actually coming up with what is the best design for the transit center. Normally, when you talk about transit, sometimes a mall might not want it. Well, they really do want it, especially its connection to the University at Albany. And they've been a great partner with us. There's also an actual change in the roadway pattern as well. Main reason for that is if we put the buses on the roadway today, if you see how they operate, it's very inefficient. We looked at trying to do bus-only lanes, but that actually would cost-wise wouldn't work. So we're actually working to upgrade the roadway roundabout here and a roundabout here to improve traffic flow, which is great because it's an improvement for CDTA. Our buses will actually save around 5 minutes per trip, which going back to how important just a minute is for transit. Big travel time savings for us, but actually just general vehicular traffic actually improves as well. And that helps it because it's sort of a larger project that benefits multiple modes of transportation. Keep going here. So here's the busway, and really the busway goes from this point to this point. And as you can see with the University at Albany, you got this high-density campus with a lot of parking on the outsides. This is the heart of it. That's where the campus center is going to be. The Harriman campus, which is proposed to be redeveloped, is here. This is really why it makes the project substantially different and, as you can see, a higher cost project. still, $70 million project is not really that high in terms of rapid transit. But as you can see, obviously the biggest costs are the transit center and the busway. The net operating cost of this one is actually substantially lower than the others, primarily because of the fact that right now we have to have multiple routes that serve these different campuses, because we can't drive through the center of these campuses because there's no busway. So it actually makes it extremely inefficient, because you'll have one route going to one campus, another route going to another campus. By making the busway, it streamlines it. So yes, the busway and the transit center may increase the capital cost, but it actually makes the operating cost a lot cheaper. And that's one thing that makes bus rapid transit great, is where you can speed up service, streamline service, and actually make it so on a daily or yearly basis, the operating costs are something that you can actually swallow. Going back to City of Albany, again, this is mainly the entire projects in the City of Albany. They've been a great partner throughout. You have downtown Albany. And then just pointing out before is University at Albany is part of their long-term plans, and SUNY Polytechnic, it's part of their long-term plans as well. So we're working in conjunction with all the different groups. Basically, the alternative analysis is what, in the end, Mario study is going to come to. So they're definitely taking on a large chunk of the process, the planning process. But basically, CDTC is the SMTC's version in the capital region. So there's CDTC and then there's CDTA. Those have been endorsed. We've been accepted into the Small Starts program. We've actually have environmental clearance from the federal level, which is a huge step to have. Here's a really interesting point, is where the MPO has actually stepped up to the plate and helped us along with the project. So now we actually have all of the money up to the point of construction itself. So design, environmental clearance, land acquisition, we have that money to move forward. And I'm always going to say this, funding dependent. This really depends on if the FTA will fund the project. It looks very much like they will. But as anyone knows about the national transportation bill, that's really up in the air. What is federal funding? Who knows? What is federal funding next year? Who knows? So we'll see what that is, but we're positioned to get ready, get moving. Last line, I'll try to move through quickly here. This is a 15-mile corridor, again, from downtown Albany. This is Albany's south end. This is Albany's north end. Through the village of Nans, the city of Watervliet, which are smaller municipalities, still high density, but smaller, to the city of Troy, which stretches this whole length with one branch to Cohoes, one branch to Waterford. It is the third line, because it actually has the least amount of ridership, but I would never say it has low ridership at all. Again, going back to that 17 million number, it's a huge portion of our ridership. You're hitting multiple municipalities, whether large or small. So you're hitting village centers and you're hitting downtowns. Really high density along the entire corridor. A lot of residential neighborhoods. And this is one thing I do want to touch on, is this is a corridor that has a significant amount of public housing and low-income residents. And the one thing sometimes you can lose sight of the fact is, well, we got to get, you know, a transit authority. It's how do we get the driver out of their car and into the bus, out of the car, into the bus. A good thing to obviously focus on. But the other thing is, how do you get the person that's already dependent upon transit? How do you improve it for them so that now they can do more of their trips by transit? So it's trying to help the betterment of the overall community, not just, you know, one population. And then last but not least, especially in the city of Troy and the city of Albany, there's actually two warehouse districts in both of those areas and a number of other neighborhoods that are, you know, seeing condo development, seeing new restaurants, businesses, very fast-paced growth for an upstate municipality, but still fast-paced nonetheless, that we're actually having transit stops right in the center of. So we're excited about that. The last piece of the downtown, or about the river corridor, which is the blue line, is we're actually building a smaller scale transit center right in the heart of the downtown, which unfortunately 40 years ago they bulldozed a block, and what behind here is this massive, you know, 70s era parking garage. So obviously that was a bad thing, but it did actually create a situation where we can build into that transit center, or build into that parking garage, and have a transit center that is literally in a quarter mile of every destination in the downtown area. Biggest difficulty with a transit center to find is a location that is most central, but is cost effective to purchase the property, and makes it so you don't have to take down buildings for another area. Luckily, we have that piece, and that's what we're building into. Capital cost of this is similar to the Red Line. The transit center is one piece of it. This is the tough part to swallow, is the operating costs. Unfortunately, unlike the Purple Line, there's not so much service that we can pull away from or streamline. Essentially, you can't just put a BRT line out there and pull away all the local service. You might take a bus that's every 10 minutes, make it every 15, or a bus that's every 15 minutes, make it every 20, but you can't pull it away because you're not hitting every single stop. The BRT is not hitting every stop that the local would. So that's where the operating cost here is a lot higher. So you have much of a reverse from the Purple Line, where the operating cost is higher, but the capital cost is less. Same thing as before. We're working, lots of development happening in this location. Very similar to where the Purple Line is, so we can actually start this roughly in 2018. Again, the MPO had funded everything up to construction, and we actually got a grant for a piece of the station construction, which we might do at an earlier stance. And that is it. Thank you.
Take some questions, and I'm going to take the first question, and that is for Ross, for the Capital District Transportation Authority. Can you give us an idea of your sources of funding for your operating costs? So obviously fares are some percentage of it, but where else do you get the funding to just run day-to-day operations?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's the most difficult question overall to getting any sort of transit project going. We're around 25% of our operating costs are paid for by fares, and that's always a good thing for people to know. And that's any transit authority. I think maybe New York City is up to 45%, but nonetheless, is the biggest bulk of funding comes from state and federal levels. But there's also something called a mortgage recording tax, which is every upstate property has this, where to simplify it, anytime someone buys or sells a property, you have a small fee. It's about 0.25% of your overall mortgage cost that goes to funding transit. There's another 0.25 that goes to the schools, another 0.25 that goes where, but we get a slice of that mortgage recording tax. And I think that's around 10%. So if you just take local funds, which are the revenue and mortgage recording, that's only around 35%. So we're heavily, heavily dependent on state and federal funding. And that's why, you know, it's very tough to project anything out more than a few years in advance, because we don't know where that's going to be, because the political climate really dictates how much money we get.
Okay. As I walk over there, I have another question, and this one's for Mario. Mario, Syracuse University right now, as part of the Chancellor's Fast Forward Initiative, has been doing a campus master plan, academic plan, all sorts of things, as well as a physical plan. Do you know if Centro has been involved, or has SMTC been involved in campus master planning at all?
To speak to Centro, I'm unsure if they've been involved.
Right.
SMTC, I know that James D'Agostino is here from our office, and we've had some preliminary conversations a while back.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we are aware of the situations that are going on.
Okay. All right. And just to remind everybody, we did have Centro here early in the OCL study process. We had Centro here, and they've also been involved in OCL study sessions. So they've been in the room.
I hope I'm not asking a question that I might have missed because I snuck in late. But did you purposely not include the airport and the train station in this? I would think that they would want, especially the College Lane in Albany, would want to feed from the airport.
That's the question we get all the time. What's interesting is the fact that for bus service, well, one is the airport is so far away from any other dense development that existing travel time to get all the way out to the airport, going back to those numbers of operating costs, so let's say one of those lines was the river, or the purple line would have been $2.2 million. Well, if we extended that to the airport, that would probably be up to around $4 million operating costs to do. And you're never going to get the ridership back. It is a thing that everybody likes because everybody goes to the airport once in a while. Everybody goes to the train station once in a while. But what we need is something where people are going to, on a regular basis, use the service. We've expanded. We actually operate the rail stations. We've expanded our service to the rail station on existing routes. We've seen a blip in the amount of ridership. Sometimes there's just the population that would get on a bus or get on a bus to go to the train station is less than somebody who's going to operate their private vehicle, get a taxi cab. So what we've seen is there isn't really that high level of demand, and that might be what you find in the Syracuse region as well.
So in Syracuse, we have a pretty high level of spatial mismatch where people who live in the city don't have the type of jobs right near them that they're able to get, and people who live in the suburbs don't have the type of jobs right near them that they're able to do as well. So on the blue line that you were talking about, and there's a lot of public housing developments there, can you talk a little bit about connecting those to factory jobs or different things that might be able to get folks to those more? And then also, when you're talking about the operating costs of that, have you done any research about what kind of tax base would increase by being able to supply more jobs to areas like?
Yeah, well, for your second question, so there's the idea of when you, and some regions have this, and it's tied to light rail, where you put out transportation infrastructure, know what that tax base is going to increase, take that a chunk of those tax increases and help do the operating. For BRT, and especially basic BRT, and I don't ever want to downplay what we're doing, but it's not at that level where we could seriously ask for that extra revenue that gets generated from additional tax revenue to come to us. I'm completely forgetting your first question. I apologize.
Jobs.
Oh, well, what I just showed you was three corridors. When I talked before about the route restructurings, the route restructurings that feed to the BRT lines cover essentially the entire region in all of those areas of high employment. So there's a lot of employment on those lines. There's a lot of people who live on those lines, especially the employment in the downtown areas. But even and they serve, actually, as I talked about, some of the largest malls, so jobs out in the suburban areas. But what you don't see on that map is the underlying route network. And now using the BRT to get from one location to another and then transfer, you might still have to transfer, but now your trip is, you know, 30% shorter if you were living in the South End and had to go to a job that's in the suburban area. And then vice versa, if you live in a suburban area, which I didn't touch on, was there's park and rides located at each one of the BRT stations. So then if you're not in walking distance to a station, well, it doesn't really matter, you can hop in your car, drive 5 minutes, park, and then go in. Like the Crossgates Mall, actually part of that project, which I should have touched on, is expanding the park and ride by 200 spaces. That's in a suburban area in Guilderland, so anybody in that surrounding area can just jump in their car and then jump on the bus.
A number of communities, either big cities or small resort areas, I'm thinking of Dallas with their trolleys, maybe Lake Placid or Sun Valley and so forth, have free service of a certain kind that takes people back and forth to areas that they really need to get to. And they just get on and get off wherever they want to. Does that fit anywhere in your studies and you're looking at the communities where something like that might fit?
Kind of similar to the airport train station question, there is some sort of tourist population that comes into the capital region. I think a key part of that would be is, and in all the examples you used, is there's some, actually ties into the funding question as well, there's some other entity that's paying for that reduction in revenue. So it's if it's free, and that's the thing within in most of our regions in upstate, it's hard to have sort of a visitors bureau or something, convention centers bureau, that is large enough. But at the same point, actually, in the city of Albany, we're redoing our convention center. There's actually a new casino that's opening up in Schenectady. Those entities are actually looking to partner with us and provide that, whether it's increased level of service or actually make it so anyone who's riding to and from those locations could ride for free.
This is a continuation of that job question, and it speaks to the third line that you spoke about, and that is that people start very early on in the manufacturing plants. Are you going to be servicing them? And they also have a second, an evening tour that might last until midnight. Are you going to be taking care of them? One other question.
Yeah.
And that is, you're going to spend $60 billion on two centers, transit centers. Are those going to be solar, served by solar power?
To answer the first question, actually, we have on many of our BRT stations, we actually have solar panels. So I wouldn't even just look at the transit centers, but we try to integrate solar as much as possible. We actually do this in our overall system. It ends up being cheaper, more because then you don't have to, you know, let's say there's a street pole that's three blocks down that you'd have to feed electricity into. It's actually cheaper for us to just throw up a solar panel and then it can light the shelter. Should have talked about span of service. Span of service are hours of operations that these routes run. The purple line will run nearly 24 hours a day. The blue line will start as early as 4 a.m. and go to 2 a.m., which, if you look at that, is essentially 24 hours. So in those operating costs that I showed, it takes into account these extremely long spans for exactly what you're talking about. You know, manufacturing in the capital region really isn't a high level of employment, but hospitals are. All these other just retail that may go late at night. There's a number of jobs where, and especially if someone, let's say your job starts at 6 a.m., you may have to be on a bus for a while if you're going to it. Back to the question about the feeder route. So you need to start that service very early for those people who need to get to those early morning jobs.
So thinking of getting cars off the road and getting people onto buses and stuff, I'm wondering what kind of analysis have you done, like data collection and stuff, as far as what change this has made over the time that you've had the new line? And I'm curious about, like, what are the demographics of your new regular riders?
That's a good question. I will say that the analysis of, I mean, I can tell you, hey, ridership's increased by 25%, which sounds like a great number, but then we haven't ever actually really quantified what the impact on the roadways has been in the sense of congestion relief, partially because at the same exact time, new development has been occurring. So you can't pin, and I'm sure, you know, MPOs have the worst job because it's somewhat their job to try to do these predictions, but it's extremely hard because there's no static point where development ends. Everything's calm and cool for a while. So I don't have a clear answer for you on that. And I keep forgetting the double. The new riders. Yes, sorry. Yep. Yeah, so that's a good question. The new riders, what we've seen is an uptick in, we do a monthly survey of all of our routes, which collects together at an annual survey at the end. And what we've seen is a substantial uptick in income levels of people who do ride, which is surprising of the, you know, the number of I forget what percentage it is, but the number of people that are making over $100,000 a year, which is a substantial income, that actually even doubled. So what we're seeing is a lot of people who would never think about taking a bus now see that the service is better, and are most likely working in these downtown areas where parking's difficult, where it may end up being that the parking they have to pay for, or the parking is in a garage that's five blocks away, and why not just jump on a bus that lets you off right in front of your office door?
Mario, Syracuse is a place that I find I'm 5 minutes from anywhere, and I'm just wondering if there's enough demand in this community for the kind of system that Albany has?
Within the 2014 transit system analysis, there was some preliminary demographic analysis that went into it as well. So one of the keys of advancing these two corridors in the city of Syracuse is that they did meet some general thresholds for the possibility of enhanced services. With our study, we're going to be furthering that analysis, of which will include another examination of the potential based on densities.
This sort of builds off of Russ's question. It seems like part of the success of the Bus Plus system in the Capital District is that you're really a multi-centered region, right? You have three cities, and you're really connecting those cities one to another. So I wonder how much that's a part of the success and your ability to grow the system that you're developing. And there's a second question with the, you mentioned the pyramid, is it Crossgates Mall? As part of their interest, obviously they want to attract students. Are they also looking at that as a potential place for incorporating more mixed use?
For the pyramid piece, part of this, actually, you got to think about it two pieces. One, it brings more customers there. Whatever their long-term plans are there, mixed use probably not so much, but if you think about it, it's always cost-effective for anyone to bring customers in, and those customers coming in without a car. Because now if you bring X amount of new people in, they don't bring a car, then that frees up more area for development. What that development is, I wouldn't be able to say. It's interesting because people do bring this up to us about the I love using this term, it's polynucleated is the term for the capital region. Good planning dork term, but it actually makes it difficult for transit because of these dead zones that are in the middle of the cities, between the cities. So no matter what, a bus that has to go from Schenectady to Albany is picking up very few people for that 3-mile stretch or anywhere. It does make it difficult. On the other end, it does make it a little bit better because you always have people going in both directions on your buses. So there's people heading to Schenectady in the morning, back in the evening, and vice versa to Albany. But actually, it's mostly for cities. It's easier when you have all of your density in one area, because then you can talk about doing BRT corridors that are more like this 8-mile corridor, the Purple Line, rather than 17-mile corridors or 30-mile corridors, which become very, very not cost-effective.
I want to thank you, Ross Farrell from Capital District, and Mario Colon from SMTC. Thank you very much.